This concern to all the people we have here tonight, but it's always been a cause of question to me whether a Jew in the United States should align himself with the pro-life movement or with the pro-choice movement. Do we say that it's important that we dictate the proper morality to goyim, and therefore we should require them to be pro-life? Or do we say it's not really our concern what the goyim do with themselves? Let them do as many abortions as they want, if they so please, and should we perhaps be pro-choice? That's one side of the question. The other side of the question, which bothers me, is, in fact, let us assume for a moment that Judaism is pro-life. Would it be good for us to have something like a constitutional amendment banning abortion, or is that not a good idea? And that's a question which we won't answer completely tonight, but we will begin to answer tonight. Tonight, we're going to discuss specifically what kind of iser one transgresses, what prohibition one transgresses, if and when one performs or has an abortion performed on oneself, or one's fetus, obviously. And this question is really interesting in that there's no explicit source for abortion in the Torah. Doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that abortion is prohibited. Doesn't say anywhere in the Torah explicitly that killing fetuses is prohibited. So therefore, it's difficult for us to trace back where exactly the Isser comes from. The most basic source we have is a source in Chumash Bereishis, in Parshas Noach, which doesn't, however, discuss Jews. It discusses Goyim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Nun Zayinu Beis, which you have here on the top on page 1, brings down, where I have the brackets, Ksiv v'sefer Agadah to the Beirav. It says in the book of Agadah to our stories, but here obviously it's a halachic discussion, which is written in the house of Rav, Ben Noach Nerag B'dayin Echad. To kill a Jew, to execute a Jew in courts, how many judges do you need? 23. To kill, execute a Goy in court, you only need one judge. Uv Eid Echad. To execute a Jew in Jewish court, you need two witnesses. To execute a Goy in court, you only need one witness.
That's a Jewish court.
What?
Jewish court of law.
No, in a non-Jewish court of law. We're talking about the non-Jews among themselves. Shalom Basra, of course, in our court that applies as well, but even in their courts, they only need one judge and one witness. Shalom Basra without warning. In other words, in order to execute a Jew, he has to be warned before he transgresses the prohibition which he's about to transgress, that if you do it, we're going to put you to death in court. If he's not forewarned, then he's not put to death. We might mete out some other punishment on him, but not capital punishment. However, a goy is put to death even without forewarning. However, says Gemara, despite that, it has to be specifically mipi ish v'lo mipi isha. Testimony by goyim is only accepted also from a man and not from a woman. V'afilu karo, but it can even be a relative. That's not relevant to our discussion tonight. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Amru Nei Rabbi Shmuel, they said, Af alho barin, a goy is killed even if he kills a fetus. If a goy commits an abortion, then he's put to death for having performed that abortion. The Gemara discusses the various reasons for the halachas just quoted, and then it says afterwards that the reason why this is the last halacha is true, that a goy is put to death for performing an abortion, because we have a pasuk in Parshas Noach. The pasuk in Parshas Noach tells us, "Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam damo yishafech." If I kill a person's blood, if I spill a person's blood in a person, then I'm put to death. Says, "What does it mean, a person's blood in a person?" It must mean a fetus. Because a fetus is a person within a person. So the pasuk must be telling us that a goy who committed an abortion, he was shofech dam adam, he spilled the blood of a person, ba'adam, in another person, is put to death for that transgression. And therefore, we paskin, and this is brought down in the Rambam, that one of the seven prohibitions which apply to a goy is the iser, the prohibition of murder. A subcategory of murder for a goy is abortion. If a goy commits an abortion, he's chayav misa, he's supposed to be put to death. That's by a goy, but not by a Jew. We never find anywhere this halacha stated by Jews. We'll get to that. On the contrary, we find that in halacha it's paskin that if a Jew commits an abortion, he's not chayiv misa. We don't yet know what he transgresses, but he's not chayiv misa. Why not? So the reason which is given is also not explicit anywhere in the Talmud. What we do have here, on the opposite side of page 1, a Gemara from Nida, Daf Mem Beis of Mem Dalet of Beis, states that somebody who kills a child, even if the child is only one day old, is executed. He gets capital punishment. And says Gemara, how do we know that? And we are having in the brackets, if somebody kills a one-day-old child is killed. Why? If it says in the Torah that if somebody kills any soul, what does any soul mean? The Gemara says, no matter how old that soul is, infanticide, killing an infant, is just as much a capital crime as killing a fully grown and mature adult. There is no distinction. In both cases, the murderer is executed, put to death for the avera of murder. Why? Because it says nefesh. Oh, from this, the commentators derive the Rishonim, the Achronim, and the Poskim that an ubar, a fetus, is not a nefesh. Now, it doesn't say that anywhere in the Gemara. All it says here is that a child who's a day old is a nefesh. Where do we see that a child less than a day old, in other words, where do we see the fetus is not a nefesh? So this takes a little bit of work to get to. Let's turn the page to page 2. There's a Mishnah in Olos. The Mishnah in Olos here on the right says, right side, in Perek Zayin, Halacha Vav, Mishnah Vav says, Ha'isha shimak shaleled. If a woman is having difficulty giving birth, and you have no choice, the woman is in danger of losing her life because she's in terrible childbirth, then you cut up the child, the fetus, which is within her womb, and you take it out limb by limb. Because her life comes before his. Now, the Mishnah doesn't explain why, but the Mishnah tells us the life of the mother precedes the life of the child. However, if most of the child is out, and then the difficulty begins, then I say, ein nogibo. You cannot touch the child. Why? She'ein dochin nefesh b'pnei nefesh. You can't push off one soul because of another soul. Oh! What's the Mishnah telling us? The Mishnah seems to be telling us quite clearly that when does the fetus become a nefesh? When yotza rubo, when the majority of the fetus has already came out of the womb. Prior to that point, we don't have this principle of ein dochi nefesh mibnei nefesh. You don't have the principle of you don't push off one soul because of another soul. It must be, we can infer from the Mishnah, that an ubar, a fetus, is not a soul. Now, it has a neshama, perhaps, but it's not a soul in the halachic sense of a life and one in which there's a transgression called murder. Okay, that's what it seems from the Mishnah, which would be very well and good, except that the problem is that we have a Rambam, which seems not to say that way. And this Rambam causes tremendous difficulty. Okay, you know, there has to be a monkey wrench somewhere, right? The Rambam here is in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Rotzeach v'Shmiras Nefesh Halachotes. But before I get to read the Rambam inside, I want to tell you the Halach of Rodef outside. There's a Parshan Chumash in Parshas Kiteitze, which talks about what happens if a ganav, a thief, tunnels into your house at night, and you catch him in the act. You catch him in the act of tunneling in. The Gemara says, the Chumash tells us, you're allowed to kill him. It's called the Baba Machteres, a thief who's coming coming in a tunnel, coming in, just sneaking into your house. If you find him, you're allowed to kill him. Why? Why are you allowed to kill him? Because habo lehargecha hashkem lehargo. If somebody comes to kill you, you're allowed to kill him first. And here it's clear, we say a burglar who comes in the dark of night came with the intent to kill you if he gets caught. It's clear to us that way. We learn that in several other places in Torah as well. If somebody is running after somebody else to kill him, then anybody can kill the pursuer. That pursuer now has a status called in halacha rodef. Literally it means a pursuer. But a pursuer in halacha has the status of somebody who no longer has the right to live. And therefore, if somebody comes and kills him, not only is he potter, he's also doing a mitzvah. There's an exception to this rule. The exception is, let's say you can stop the pursuer by any other means other than killing him. Such as you can shoot him in the arm. And that way you'll slow him down, you'll stop him. In that case, you're not allowed to kill him. In that case, you have to try and stop the pursuer by some other means. But if you can't do it, if the only way you can stop the pursuer from pursuing this person with the intent to kill, then you're allowed to kill the pursuer. It's a mitzvah to kill the pursuer. What? Not well done, right? We're not talking about a case like that. That's right. So now the Rambam says a very interesting thing. In Halacha Tes, he says, that's the second wide line, Harezu mitzvahs lo taseh, there is a negative commandment. Shalachu salnev sharodi, if we are not allowed to have pity on the soul of a pursuer. You got to kill him. It's a mitzvah to kill him. Lefichach, therefore, horu chachamim, our chachamim have taught us, sha'ubara, a pregnant woman, she maksha leleid, who's having difficulty giving birth, mutar lachtoch ubar b'meyeah, you are allowed to cut up the fetus in her womb, bein besam, whether it be by use of a drug, a chemical, bein biyat, whether it be by hand, mifnei shehu kirodef acharei lehorga, because the child has a status of a rodef, a pursuer who's pursuing her in order to kill her. However, says the Rambam, v'hi mishaho tirosho, if it already came to pass that he stuck out his head, hey, no gimbo, you don't touch him. Shein dochi nefesh mivne nefesh. Because like the Mishnah said, we don't push off one soul for another soul. V'zehu tivo shel olam. And this is the natural course of affairs in the world. There are two basic problems in this Rambam, which really complement each other. The first problem is, why does the Rambam throw in rodef? The Mishnah didn't mention rodef. Why can't we say that the rationale for this halacha is simply the fact that the ubar, the fetus, is not a nefesh. It's not a soul. Why does the Rambam suffice by saying that the ubar is not called a nefesh? That's question number one in the Rambam. And question number two is, what's he saying at the end of the halacha? At the end of the halacha, he's saying, if he sticks out the head, it's no longer rodef. Why? And then she said, tivo shel olam. What does it mean? This is the natural course of affairs in the world. Why is this any different than any other pursuer? It's natural for one person to pursue another person, but we say you kill the pursuer. Why not here too? What does it mean? It's the natural course of affairs. These are the two difficulties in the Rambam. And these two difficulties have major ramifications for us. Why? Because if we say that the Rambam had to throw in the halacha of rodef in order to permit us to kill a fetus, from that we would conclude that abortion in a case where there was no rodef, where there was no imminent danger to the mother's life, would be what? What? Murder. If, however, we learn that really the Rambam meant to say that, of course, an ubar, a fetus, doesn't have the status of a nefesh, and it's just throwing in the principle of rodef like icing on the cake, that besides the principle of his not being a nefesh, he's also a rodef. So then I would say the Rambam also goes along with the logic that an ubar is not considered to be a nefesh, and that a case of abortion, even where the mother is not in danger, is not a case of murder. And I don't have to tell you that, of course, this is a vague source of argument and disagreement. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik and the Maram Shik, among others, learned that the Rambam, when he put in the halach of Rodef, meant it in its most simple sense, that an Uber is a soul. And Reb Chaim proves it from another interesting halacha, and this is not necessarily an airtight proof, but Reb Chaim wants to prove it from the fact that we're Mechalel Shabbos in order to save fetuses. Right? If you have a problem, somebody's pregnant, and there's a problem with the fetus is in distress, so you're Mechalel Shabbos to save the fetus. So from the fact that you're Mechalel Shabbos, it would seem, says Reb Chaim, that the fetus is considered to be a nefesh.
Because the fetus will endanger the mother.
What?
Maybe you're saving the mother's life. Because the mother's...
Let's say we knew that the mother was not in danger. Let's talk theoretically, okay? Let's talk theoretically.
Let's say we know.
But let's say we did know, okay? Why would it not be a proof anyway? That's what I want to hear from you. If we knew that the mother wasn't in danger. Think, why are we Mechalel Shabbos to save a soul? That's not exactly what the Gemara says, but rather, nu chalel olav. Come on, nobody knows how to finish that sentence. Chalel olav Shabbos achas, kidei shishmor Shabbos harbe. You mechalel Shabbos once in order that this person should keep a lot of Shabbos subsequently. That's what could be said about a fetus as well. Maybe right now he's not a nefesh, but he'll keep a lot of Shabbos if you save him now. What? True, it's not Bala Olam, but if we keep him now for Mechal Shabbos, there's a good chance he'll be Bala Olam. Anytime Mechal Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh, there's always a chance that the guy won't survive, right? But since there's a good chance, so if we say Chalel Olam Shabbos Achas, that's great one Shabbos, so he'll keep a lot of Shabbos. So it could be that that Sfora applies to a fetus as well. Fetus is really not a Nefesh, but since he's got potential, so we'll try and keep him alive for that reason. Okay, but nonetheless, Reb Chaim does learn that it's really a true aveira of murder to kill a fetus, and the Maram Shik also learns it's an aveira of murder, and therefore they say the Rambam had to throw in Rodev specifically. Otherwise, there would have been no Hetzer. Yeah.
Why isn't the second case where the head of the fetus came out? Why isn't that a case of Rodev?
In the case, I'll come to that in a second. Okay, let me just deal with each issue separately. So then, however, the majority of Achronim don't learn that way. The majority of later sources hold that, of course, the Rambam would agree to several other sources, which we're going to see in a few moments, who hold that a fetus is not a nefesh. So why the Rambam's throwing Rodev? So then, just as an example as to the approach taken by the poskim, the Notam Yehuda says, listen, there's halacha, that if somebody's a trefa, you know what I mean, that somebody's a trefa, a person has a mortal wound from which he will die within the next 12 months. Now, of course, in the old days, there were many more mortal wounds of that like than there are today, because now that medicine has advanced, there are very few wounds of that sort. But in the old days, there were quite a few wounds for which we could assume that a person would die within the next 12 months. The halacha is, ha-hori gets a trefa. If you kill somebody who's a trefa, who's going to die within the next 12 months because of his wounds anyway, prior wounds, you're not chayav misa. You're not executed. It's not a capital crime. Nonetheless, it's forbidden to do it. You're not allowed to kill a trefa, even though you won't be executed for it. It's forbidden. Say those achronim, among them, as I said, the Nadi Bihuda, nu, a fetus is no worse than a trefa. It's not a complete nefesh. It's not a capital crime to kill a fetus, but it's still a crime. So that's where the Rambam came on to the logic of Rodef, in order to tell you, don't think that wanton abortion is permitted no matter what the circumstances. No, there has to be a reason to do it. The reason to do it is when there are extenuating circumstances such as where the mother is in danger, when that halacha of Rodef kicks in. Otherwise, it may not be a capital crime, but it's forbidden nonetheless. That's the approach which Noi Debut and others take in the Rambam. According to that approach...
In the mission itself, what's...
Yeah. The mission is cryptic. It says, we really don't know exactly what that means. It would be the same machlokas in the Mishnah. That's right. Yeah. So if we accept the Noi Debihu's approach, then what the Rambam is really saying is the same also that a fetus is not a nefesh, but nonetheless, I need a still logic, a reason to be mati or killing him. And that logic is when the woman is in danger. Now, what about the end of the Rambam? When the Rambam says, v'hu tivo shel olam, the Rambam, everybody more or less agrees in that part of the Rambam, the Rambam is coming to explain that, you know, even though I call this fetus a rodef, it's not really a rodef. The real rodef in the classic sense of the word is a pursuer who is going intentionally to kill somebody. That's what a rodef normally is. But here, the fetus doesn't intend to kill the mother. It's not his fault, nor is it his intent, of course, to kill the mother. Therefore, who says it fits into the classic category of rodef? The Rambam tells you it's a special chiddush which Chazal tells us, a special idea which Chazal explained to us, that even though the classic rodef is one who comes with the intent to murder, and this one doesn't fall into that category, nonetheless, it's sufficiently similar to a rodef that you're allowed to kill the fetus. But says the Rambam, however, since it's not a complete rodef, since this is the nature of affairs, that a fetus is put there without his being questioned, and he comes out, whichever way he comes out, without being asked, without choosing, it's just the course of nature. So therefore, once he's out, he's not considered to be a rodef anymore. Why? Even though, if the fetus, let's say a child was born with full mental faculties, and at that time, when he came out, you asked him, do you intend to kill the mother or not? And he said, yes. So then you would put him to death. But says the Rambam, since that's not the way it works, since it's Teva Olam that he comes out without having any intent whatsoever, so therefore, at that point, he's no longer considered to be similar in any way, shape, or form to Rodef, and therefore you can't put him to death at that point anymore. And that's what the Rambam comes to explain with Zet Tivo Shel Olam. What? According to Reb Chaim, you have to say a similar idea, that Reb Chaim also holds that the Rambam is explaining with Zet Tivo Shel Olam why this Rodef is different than any other Rodef. Again, by any other Rodef, it doesn't make a difference what exactly the situation, the circumstances are. What? But he's still a Rodef.
He's a Rodef either way.
No. And that's what Reb Chaim is coming to explain. Right, he's a Rodef either way, but the Rambam is coming to explain why, despite... Exactly. Why, despite the fact that he still should be considered a rodef, once he comes out partially, you know, let's kill him anymore. Why? Because this is not a classic rodef, where the rodef had the intent to kill the person who's being pursued. Here, the rodef is coming out, because that's a course of nature, without his being consulted, without any intent to kill the mother.
You could say that about the fetus before it comes out, just the same.
Excuse me?
You could say it about the fetus just the same before it comes out, before it's halfway out.
Well, what you're saying that before the fetus comes out, you could say the same thing, and that's indeed what Noyde Biel is saying, that really Rodef is not the primary reason, but the fact that the fetus is not a nefesh. Right. But according to Reb Chaim, you're asking a very good question. According to Reb Chaim, Lichora, before the fetus comes out, it should be considered also not a Rodef because it's not its intent. So you have to say, Reb Chaim deals with that question. I don't really want to get into it, but you have to say something to the effect that what happens before he's born is considered as if it's all his fault. Now, I'm not sure exactly why. Not sure exactly. I have to concede the point. I didn't look at Reb Chaim with great detail, but he does address the question of why it shouldn't be considered, why it's considered to be all his fault before it's born. Okay? Take it on faith for this evening. Now, I don't want to get into it because I don't have enough time to. What happens, because I want to see with you, however, a few sources which say explicitly that the child doesn't have the din of nefesh before it's born. If you take a look at page 3. I'm going to skip the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's not that important. Let's just look at the Mizrahi here. The Mizrahi here is talking about the Pasuk in Mishpatim. The Pasuk in Mishpatim tells us a very basic halacha. If somebody is having a fight with another person, Reuven is fighting with Shimon, and a pregnant lady walks by, and Reuven, instead of striking Shimon as he intended, strikes the woman, and she miscarries her fetus. So then, Shimon has to pay to the husband of this pregnant woman the amount of money which her children were worth, however, whatever Beis Din reckons that to be. The halacha is, if you commit a crime for which you're liable to be executed, even if in the specific circumstances in which you committed it, you will not be executed. Say because nobody warned you before. Or because you did it unintentionally. You were a shogeg. You still don't have to pay. The principle which kicks in here is Kim Levin Rab Minei. Wherever there's a possibility of receiving a greater punishment and a possibility of receiving a lesser punishment, you always are considered to fall into the category of the greater punishment and excludes the lesser punishment, even where you're not going to get the greater punishment. Kimle, we put him in the category of the Rabamine, the greater punishment. Why? Because since he was liable to get put to death, even though he's actually not, he doesn't have to pay money. So here, all the Achronim want to say that, oh, from the fact that Shimon has to pay for the fetuses, it's clear to us that killing fetuses is not an avera for which you're chayav misa. Because if it were an avera for which you could be chayav misa, for which you could be put to death in some way, shape, or form, in some scenario, so then you would never have to pay for the fetuses. Because the halacha of kin l'rabbanei would kick in. Doesn't matter. That's what I just said before. In order to preclude what you just said. So it's Tana de Bei Chizkiah, which occurs several times in Shas, which tells us explicitly, if you, let's say, Rachmana Litzlan, you were Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg. How are you Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg? You took a rock and you threw in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You forgot it was Shabbos. You took a rock and you threw in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and you broke a window. Somebody's window when you did it. You're not going to be put to death because you did shogeg. What? Yeah, you threw Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and you threw it through Rosh Hashanah Yochid. Right. You threw it through somebody's window. So if you did this on a weekday, you'd have to pay for the window, right? If you did it on Shabbos and you did it b'mezid, did it intentionally, Michal Shabbos, you agree with me, you don't have to pay with the window. The Gemara says, even if you did it unintentionally, you forgot it was Shabbos when you threw the rock, you still don't have to pay for the window. Why? Because since if you had done it intentionally, you would have been chayav misa. Even now that you did it unintentionally, and you're not going to be put to death by Beis Din, nonetheless you don't pay because of the principle of kim le bid rabba minei. Since theoretically you could have been put to death, you don't pay for the window. So if you want to break somebody's window, do it on Shabbos. But forgetting that it's Shabbos. What? Something else. I'll tell you about theoretically. Okay, theoretically. In any event, the Mizrahi brings down, here Rebbe Elia Mizrahi, who's a Rishon, he brings down a Mechilta, which we don't have. But a Mechilta is a Medrash which was written by the Tanoim, which is a very early source. And the Tanoim say here, in this Mechilta brought down by the Mizrahi, that this is in fact the Pshat in the Pasuk, that why do you not have to pay for the vlados, for the fetuses, which you caused the woman to miscarry, because it's not a nefesh. And you can read it inside, the Mizrahi brings down the Mechilta. It's true, however, I have to tell you, that in the Mechilta itself, there's a question of pshat. The Mizrahi wants to say that really maybe a fetus is considered a nefesh. And you know why they don't have, you know why here he only pays, he pays money, even though he should be put to death, he theoretically had the possibility of being liable to capital punishment, because the fetus is a suffix nephil. Any fetus might be miscarried in the future. And therefore, since it might be miscarried in the future, so maybe it really is a nephish right now, but since later on, had it been brought to term in the next couple of months, it might have been miscarried. So therefore, he would never have been able to be put to death, and therefore, he has to pay money. But all the Achronim I ask, everybody else, the Maharal here in the bottom, the Gurariye and others, and the Behuda as well, they say it can't be pshat. Because in that case, I would still say Kim Rab Mnei. Because since there's an outside, there's a pretty good chance that the kids would live, that the fetuses would be brought to term and be born healthy babies. So that's what I would assume would be the case. And I would say that maybe I wouldn't put him to death, but he's definitely in a scenario, possibility of being liable to the death penalty. And therefore, I would say, Kim Libi Rabaminei. So therefore, it must be from the fact that he does have to pay. And I don't say, Kim Libi Rabaminei, that the pshat in the Mechilta is that it's not nefesh. A fetus is not a nefesh. And in fact, coming back to the right hand of the page, that Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rashi and that Gemara in Sanhedrin says, yeah, it's hard to find, but it's in the wide lines in Rashi. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines down. In Rashi, Dibra Maskel Yotza Rosho. In that Rashi, he says, right below the words Yotza Rosho, the Chos Manchel Yotza L'Avir Olam, as long as the fetus hasn't come out into the air of the world, as long as he hasn't come out of the mother's womb, Lav Nefeshu. He's not a Nefesh. It's explicit in Rashi. Rashi says outright that this child is not a Nefesh until he's born. Okay? So, true, we have a question as to what the Pshat in the Rambam is. But as far as Rashi is concerned, Rashi says explicitly that the kid is considered not to be a Nefesh. By the way, I see I left something out here. One of the other reasons given in the Rambam as to why the Rambam had to throw in the logic of Rodef is because otherwise you wouldn't be allowed to kill the fetus for another reason. Because we see in the Pasuk from the fact that Shimon has to pay the father of the fetuses for the fetuses, that they're considered to be the money of the family. At least the money of the father, maybe the money of the mother as well, but they're the property of the family. So that's why you wouldn't be allowed to kill a fetus unless there was halacha of rodef. Because true, maybe there's no issur of murder, but there's still issur of gzela. You're not allowed to steal something unless there's pikuach nefesh involved. That's why the Rambam had to throw in that it's halacha of rodef. Since there's halacha of rodef here, so therefore you're allowed to kill the fetus to save the mother. Yeah, one of the other answers given as to why the Rambam had to throw in Rodef, even though a fetus is not a nefesh, is because there's another reason that abortion should not be permitted, because of gezel. Because you're stealing money from the father. Because the fetuses are considered to be the property of the father. So therefore, the Rambam had to tell you, true, they belong to the father, but nonetheless, where there's halach of Rodef, so then you're allowed to kill the fetuses to save the mother. Gzela is not permitted under normal conditions, except here where there's extenuating circumstance. So it's not the avera of murder, which the Rambam had to preclude by mentioning Rodef, but the avera of Gzela, which the Rambam had to preclude by mentioning Rodef. Okay, and we'll come back to that later on this evening. In the meantime, all right, so we see that there is no explicit issue, there is no capital punishment, there is no din of nefesh by a fetus, and therefore there's no capital punishment for killing a fetus by a Jew. By a goy there is, because of shofech dam adam ba'adam, but by a Jew there isn't. So what issur is there? What is the possible issur? So in order to understand this, we have to see a machlokas between two taisus. One taisus, if you turn the page for, is the Sanhedrin daf nun tesam na'alef. And there we have a principle, the Gemara, which I underlined the Gemara, which Rabbi Noble wanted to allude to before. Leikam midam del Yisrael shari. There's nothing which is allowed for a Jew. I'm sorry. There's nothing which is allowed for a Jew. Ul'akum asr, which is forbidden for a goy. In other words, there's nothing which goyim are not allowed to do, which we are allowed to do. Our religion is not easier than theirs. It's only harder. If there's something which is aser for a guy to do, for sure it's aser for us to do. If it's something which is mutter for a guy, maybe it's aser for us. But there's nothing which is aser for them, which is mutter for us. So says Tosfos here at the bottom, Tosfos, I understand. What about killing fetuses? What about abortions? That's aser for goyim and mutter for Jews. So he says, you have to answer the first place where I have underlined in Tosfos, Bisrael Potur Afagav the Potur Mikoma Kom Lo Sharei. Even though Israel is not liable for the death penalty for killing a fetus, nonetheless it's not permissible. It falls into the category of impermissible killing. Kind of like killing a trefa, like we mentioned before. Just like you're not allowed to kill a trefa, a person who has a mortal wound from which he's going to die within the next 12 months, so too you're not allowed to kill a fetus. By the way, it's an interesting line at the end of Tosfos that he wants to say, although that's not our topic for tonight, but he wants to say that it's possible that just like a Jew is allowed to kill a fetus in order to save the life of a mother, so too a goy is allowed to do the same thing. That the principle of dochi nefesh mipnei nefesh, because the kid is not fully nefesh, might apply by a goy as well. But that's, we'll leave that for another time. It's an interesting question whether a goy is allowed to kill a fetus in order to save a mother. In the meantime, what we see in Tosfos is that a Jew is forbidden to kill a fetus, but not capitally punished, it's not liable to capital punishment. However, there's another Tosfos which says something extraordinary. And in order to see this Tosfos, it begins a Mem Dalet Amud Aleph in Nida, which is here on the right side. And it goes on to Mem Dalet Amud Beis. And Mem Dalet Amud Beis we photocopied earlier back on page 1. So I'll ask you to turn back to page 1. Just a second, yeah? What?
According to the last line of Tosfos, that the goy is the same thing as Yisrael.
Yeah.
So the goy is the same thing as Yisrael, so there's no question.
No, but a goy in a case where it's not in a the gemara in a case where a goy is not willing to say the mother is chayav misa, and that's our shaila. What's the halacha of a goy of Yisrael doing in a case where it's not to save the mother? So he's saying in that case for Yisrael, a goy is chayav misa. A Jew is not. It's also, but it's not chayav misa for it.
In other words, the punishment can be worse.
Yeah, the punishment for a goy. Oh yeah, it's got to be also for a Jew. It doesn't necessarily have to have the same punishment, right? So now, the Tosfos here on Mem Dalet Amud Beis in Nida says an amazing thing. I'm going back to page 1. On the right-hand side, on the left-hand side, I have a bracket in Tosfos, in the upper right-hand corner. I'm starting in the middle of the Tosfos' train of thought, but I'll try and make it clear. Umiyu Epsher, it's possible, the Dafka from Tosfos on the right-hand side, on the right-hand column of the left-hand side of page 1. Okay? Yeah, up at the top. Everybody see that? Umihu? Umihu, after it's possible, that when are you not chaya for killing a fetus? Hechad imo chaya. Where the mother's still alive. Lo mechaya v'horgo. You're not chaya if you kill a fetus. Achiyotzi rosho. Until the fetus sticks his head out of the mother's womb. Shatolik sas bechias imo. Because then he's not fully alive, because his mother is really sustaining him, and he doesn't have a complete nefesh. Since he's not independent, he's not a full nefesh. Aval hecho de mesa, but if you have a case where there's a fetus inside a dead mother, and you kill that fetus, I don't know if this is medically possible, but theoretically, if you have a live fetus within a dead mother, and we're not talking about a brain-dead mother, we're talking about a dead mother, dead. If you have a live mother within a live fetus within a dead mother, so then maybe you're chayev for killing the fetus. Mishun the kamunach bekuf sadami. The fetus is not being sustained by the mother because the mother's dead. It's just like the fetus is in a box. So therefore, it's a kol nefesh. It's a nefesh already. It's just a nefesh which is inside a case, being the mother, the dead mother. So maybe in that case you are chayev. Now says Tosfos v'im toimar. He says, if you're going to ask a question, if you're going to say that you're allowed to kill a fetus, bebeten, and when it's inside the mother's womb, afilu meso imo, even if the mother is dead, v'lo havi kumunach b'gufs, it's not like it's in a box. Amay mechalim es lovas or Shabbos? Why you mechalo Shabbos to save a fetus? Question we asked before, and Tosfos goes on to give an answer. Why mechalo Shabbos to save a fetus, even though you're allowed to kill a fetus? But Tosfos uses a mind-boggling expression here. Tosfos says, what? What do I have underlined here? Mutter lahargo. You know, we have in halacha three gradations. We have chayev, which means you're liable for a punishment. We have potter, which means you're not liable for a punishment, but it's still forbidden. And we have mutter, which means you're allowed to go ahead and do it. And Tosfos said here an amazing lashon. Tosfos said, it's mutter lahargo. You're allowed to kill a fetus, at least when the mother's still alive. When the mother's dead, he said, maybe you can't kill the fetus. Because maybe then it's just like a fetus in a, like a person in a box, not like a fetus in a mother's body. But where the mother is alive, so it's Tosfos, mutter lahargo. You're allowed to kill a fetus. It's mashma from this Tosfos, it sounds from this Tosfos, like a mind-boggling chiddush, that there is no iser of abortion in Torah. That's what it sounds like Tosfos is saying. Now, a lot of the Achronim jump on Tosfos. They say, can't be. Rav Moshe Feinstein says a mistake in Tosfos. Should have said, patur ahargo. Should have said, he's not chayev, but he's not, but it's not mutter. And others say that Tosfos didn't mean exactly what he seems to say, but it's on the books. You know, it says mutter here. And the truth is, there's a little bit of a Gemara which sounds this way. So it points out that Tzitz Eliezer, a modern-day posek, he points out that there's a Gemara which sounds that way in Erchin. And that's, if you turn back to page 5, the Gemara in Erchin says, actually it's a Mishnah in Erchin, the Gemara in Mishnah in Erchin says, Ha'isha shiyotza l'harek, if a woman is going out to be killed, you don't wait. Let's say the woman is pregnant, you don't wait till she gives birth. She's being executed for some capital crime she committed. You kill her before she gives birth, you don't wait. So the Gemara asks a question on the Mishnah. Gemara says, Pshita, isn't it obvious? Gufai. The fetus is part and parcel of the woman. Of course you kill the woman together with the fetus. And the Gemara says, no, I might think that since the fetus is the property of the father, so the father, he didn't commit any capital crime. He says, wait a second. Okay, so my wife has to be killed. But why should I lose my money because of that? Why should I lose my children who are my property? And there was a case like this recently, I think it was in Tennessee, where there was litigation between about embryos, about frozen embryos. Who owned them, right? The couple was divorced, and the wife wanted to, I don't know what they do with the frozen embryos, how they dispose of them. She wanted them disposed of. And the father said, no, it's my property, and, you know, these are kids. They're embryos, but they're fertilized eggs. So it's a similar question. Whose property is it? So Gemara says here, I might say the father comes and says, it's my property. Don't kill the kid, don't kill my wife, because I want the fetuses. So says Gemara, no, that's the chiddush of our Mishnah, that we kill the woman together with the fetus and tough on the father's property. But says the Eliezer, how could the Gemara say pshita? If there's an iser of killing fetuses, it's not pashut that we kill the mother together with the fetus. The fetus is not chayev misa, and you're killing the fetus. It's in essence an abortion. So how could it be pashut to the Gemara that you do it? That the Gemara said pshita, that it's obviously permissible. Says the Eliezer, this seems like a little bit of sustaining evidence for Tosfos. Tosfos and Nida, who said there is no iser, it's mutter to kill fetuses. From the Gemara's question, pshita, it sounds like the Gemara agrees that it's mutter to kill fetuses. All right, so that's an approach in this Tosfos, and the way, if you learn the Gemara in Erech in this way, which would teach you that it's mutter to kill a fetus. Mutter, completely. Let's leave it alone for a moment. Even if he's not a rodef. Right. Let's leave that alone for a moment. Tosfos and Sanhedrin argues. It's Machlokas and Tosfos. Tosfos and Sanhedrin, of course, there are many Rishonim agree with Tosfos and Sanhedrin, holds that it's Pater Avalosser. It's you're not liable to capital punishment, but it's forbidden. And Tosfos and Nita holds that it's Mutter.
But we see there still has to be a reason where they want to kill the mother.
What?
Where they want to put the mother to death.
Right. I wanted to go a little bit further before we could get down to the actual psak halacha, so to speak. There's a separate issue. What's the status of a fetus before it's 40 days old? I have an interesting Gemara here in Yevamos. Here on the left side of page 5. The Gemara in Yevamos says, Vatanya bas kohen shnisas liyisrael lemeis. We have a brisa, a statement made by Tanoim, which tells us that a woman who comes from the house of Kohanim, she married Yisrael, and Yisrael died. Her husband died, and she didn't have any kids. Tovelis, assuming she became Tomei, she went to Levaya, she goes to the mikveh, Vochelis b'trumah l'erev, and she eats truma that night. Says the Gemara, well, actually, the Gemara implies a question. How do you know she's not pregnant? She's pregnant. She has the fetus, who's not a Kohen, fetus who's Yisrael, impedes her from eating truma. As law, halacha is a woman who comes from a family of Kohanim, if she has a fetus, or of course if she gave birth to a child from her husband who's Yisrael, she can no longer eat truma. She doesn't go back to her father's house to eat truma. So wait a second. Why aren't you afraid that she's pregnant? So says Gemara, very interesting thing. Amrav Chista Toveles Vocheles, she goes to the mikvah, can eat truma at Arboim, up to the 40th day. De'i Lamabra, because she's not pregnant, if she's not pregnant, Lamabra, she's not pregnant. V'ima'abra, and if she's pregnant, at Arboim, until the 40th day, Ma'yo Ba'almahu, until the 40th day, the fetus is like water. It's not considered to be a nefesh at all. It's considered to be water. And therefore, after the 40th day, she can't eat truma. Misafek, maybe she's pregnant. But before the 40th day, she can eat truma, because even if she is pregnant, it's not yet a fetus. It's just a bunch of cells, which are like maya ba'alma, just like water. Somebody once said to me that, in fact, scientifically, they proved that by the 40th day, only at the 40th day does the brain form. In other words, the fetus has no brain until the 40th day. Now, we don't know if that's what Chazal were basing this 40-day business on, but that is sustaining evidence for what Chazal are saying, that until the 40th day, the fetus is Kamaya Ba'alma. All right. This has important ramifications. If you turn the page, you see how far the Mishnah Berurah takes it, to page 6. The Mishnah Berurah brings down a halacha that if you have a lady who's pregnant, here on the right-hand side, if you have a lady who's pregnant who smells food, and she becomes weak, and we see that she obviously has a tremendous desire for the food, and seems like she can't go on without it. So, you know, first we try and tell her, listen, it's Yom Kippur, take it easy. If it doesn't work, we give her a little bit to eat until she's restored to her health. And says the Mishnah Berurah, it doesn't make a difference whether it's beginning of the pregnancy or the end of the pregnancy. No matter what stage of the pregnancy it is, we give her to eat, not because we're afraid we'll lose her, because we're afraid that if we don't give her to eat, we'll lose the fetus. Says the Mishar Hatziun, that's the Mishnah Berurah's list of sources for his halachas, here at the bottom, where I underlined it. The Avshar, the Lo Shayach Zeh Ki Machar Arboim Yom. Maybe we only allow her to eat if her fetus is more than 40 days old. If her fetus is not 40 days old, maybe we're Take, not Mechalo Yom Kippur, maybe we don't allow her to eat on Yom Kippur in order to save the fetus. Because since a fetus before 40 days old is not considered to be a fetus, it's just Mayo Ba'alma, it's just water. So therefore, there's nothing to save. And in fact, the poskim Take are not sure if what is Mechalo Shabbos to save a fetus less than 40 days old. It's not an issue for tonight. It's an interesting Shiloh. But you see that the 40-day issue is brought down halacha l'maisa, that we're talking not sure if a child, if a fetus less than 40 days old, has the status of a fetus or just the status of water. And by association, therefore, abortion of a less than a 40-day-old fetus is going to be much more lenient. And now let's look at a little bit further.
Because we don't consider the mother...
The mother's not in danger. Right.
In danger during the first 40 days. It's nothing to do
right.
Whether the child...
No. He's talking about because we're afraid of the child, not because of the mother. That's what he's saying.
Is that why we feed the mother?
Because of the child. Feed the mother because of the child. Well, that's what he's assuming here. And they're saying within the first 40 days, maybe we don't feel.
You're assuming for the fact that...
Otherwise, the first 40 days doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it makes a difference as to what the stage of the mother is.
Why?
There's most of the credit.
Why? What difference is there?
No, I don't think
that's what he means. It doesn't sound like that. Yeah.
When does the 40 days count from? The last menstrual period or from?
No, from conception. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, now there's another very interesting halacha here about the first 3 days. The first 3 days, the Mishnah Berurah brings, and this is of course very relevant to the RU 486 bill, right, which is like which you take right at this big tumult now about whether they're going to allow in the United States or not allow in the United States, which is something which caused an abortion immediately after the conception has occurred. So it's interesting halacha here, which is brought down by the Nishmas Avram, Dr. Avram as Avram, from also Ilchus Yom Kippurim. It's brought down that everybody's supposed to go to the Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. And it's also brought down that a woman is supposed to go to the Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. It's brought down, I don't know, not all women have this minhag, most women don't, but it's brought down such a minhag that even women who don't have to go to the Mikvah for other reasons go to the Mikvah Erev Yom Kippur. So it's brought down here. What? During the day. It's brought down here in the Mishnah Berurah that if a woman had relations with her husband within the past 3 days prior to Erev Yom Kippur, so then she has to make sure to clean herself internally before going to the mikvah. Because we say, why did Klai Yisrael have to separate from their wives 3 days before Matan Torah? What? Because, right, for the next 3 days after having relations, it's possible that the woman will have a discharge of the husband, Shichva Zera, and that will make her tummy. So therefore, they had to wait 3 days until there was no possibility of discharge anymore. So says the Mishnah Berurah, if it's 3 days before, if the Erev Yom Kippur comes in within 3 days of having had relations, so the woman has to make sure that she doesn't have any, she has to clean herself internally. Says in the Gemara, but that's only true if it's not immediately after she went to the mikveh because she was in Nida. Because if she went to the mikveh because she was in Nida and had relations with her husband subsequently, so we know she might have conceived during those 3 days. And she conceived during those 3 days. And then she cleans herself internally. So then she transgresses an Isser. What Isser does she transgress? Says the Mishnah Berurah, the same Isser of a man transgresses by Otzah Zera Levatola, by discharging seed where it's not for the purpose of relations. She does when she removes the seed from her own womb. So it says, say the Achronim, says Nishim Savram, what do we see from this Mishnah Berurah? It's not the Isser of abortion within the first 3 days. It's only the Isser of Ashchos HaZera, which is a much lighter Isser. It's not even an Isser, perhaps, might not even be an Isser Doraisa to be Mashchi Zera. It's not mentioned anywhere in Torah. We say it's forbidden to be Mashchi Zera, to waste the male seed. So we say that there's such an Isser. Perhaps be Doraisa, perhaps be Rabbana, but that's not an Isser of murder. And we see here from during the first 3 days, for sure, the only Isser which is involved is Ashchos HaZera. Why is that? Because during the first 3 days, there's no implantation. The cells have not yet become implanted in the uterus, and therefore they're not considered at all. Even if you say within the first 40 days it's considered a fetus, within the first 3 days it's nothing. It's just male seed and female seed and not a fetus. And therefore, says Nishma Savram, you know, I asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if you turn to page 7, you'll see. It says, ask Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach a shayla. There's a shayla in the poskim. If a woman, let's say, Rachman al-San was raped, and you're afraid she became pregnant, and she was raped in a way that it causes mamzerus. Right? Let's say a married woman was raped by another Jew, and if she's pregnant, then there's mamzerus involved. The child will be a mamzer. So you're allowed to abort. So we won't talk about that tonight. We'll talk about it one of the other evenings. But there's a question whether you're allowed to abort under such circumstances. And if you're not allowed to abort after 40 days, perhaps you're allowed to abort within the first 40 days because it's only Maya Ba'alma. But Dr. Avraham asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, what about the first 3 days? Nowadays, we know how to do an abortion during the first 3 days. We know how to make sure that the fertilized egg doesn't implant itself in the walls of the womb, walls of the uterus, and we won't have a problem. Is that permitted? So Shlomo Zalman said, yeah, that's for sure permitted. Since it's only, like the Mishnah Berurah writes, at worst, an Isser of Hashchos HaZera, of destroying seed, not an Isser of abortion, therefore it's for sure permitted. So if a woman was raped, Rachmana Litzlan, or something else, then you would be allowed to perform an abortion during the first 3 days. Everybody agrees. Okay? After the first 3 days, then we answer the shayla. during the next 37 days the question of, is it indeed Maya Ba'alma? And we'll see what the poskim hold about that subsequently to this evening. And after the first 40 days, of course, it's considered to be a fetus. And then when it's considered to be a fetus, then we enter into the question of what, if anything, is the issur of killing a fetus. And now we'll come back to the issur of killing the fetus. The Roger Trevor here, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, the Roger Trevor, wrote a tshuva here in 1934, in which he sums it up very nicely. And I'm not going to go with you, since it's late, I don't want to go through it with you inside, but he brings down 9 points in order, which basically sum up everything we said this evening. He was asked to Shaila. There was a woman who had an abortion, and her husband wanted to know if he's mechuyev to divorce her. Does he have to divorce her because she had an abortion? And the Roger Trevor goes through the issue, and he goes through these progressions. He says, first of all, from Tosis in Sanhedrin, which we saw before, the Tosis in Sanhedrin. What? That she's a murderer. So you'll ask, is somebody mechuyev to divorce a murderer? That we'll see. One moment. But that what? She also stole his money. That's right. She's a gazlan. She's a gazlan and a rotzeach. That's a shiloh. Okay? We'll see in a second. Well, let's just follow the progression. So he says, from Tosis in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Tes, which he learned over here, it sounds like the Isser is an Isser of Ritzicha. True, you're not Chayav Misa for that Ritzicha, but you're called, it's a capital crime. But then he says, on the other hand, though, from Tosis in Nida, it seems to tell us that it's Mutar Midoraisa, that you're allowed to do it. But says the Roach of it, even still, even according to Tosfos in Nido, who says you're allowed to kill it, all Tosfos in Nido is saying is that abortion is mutter from the perspective of murder. But there still is an Isser involved. What Isser is there involved? Isser Chavola. One is not allowed to inflict wounds upon oneself, and of course not upon others, for no reason. Okay, you're not allowed to wound yourself if there's no good reason. As a matter of fact, there are even shilas if one is allowed to give blood. Because it's chabura, maybe shalol tzarech. All right. It's a question. It's only chutzlar. It's not Eretz Yisrael. But there's a shaila. It's brought down Reb Moshe Feinstein.
Piercing the ears.
What? Piercing the ears, right? Lubav Treba Asher Papia, women piercing their ears because of chavola shalol tzarech. That's right. So it's a shaila whether chavola is tzarech or not tzarech. All right. What is tzarech and what is not tzarech? But he says, even according to Tosfos, who says it's permissible, that's only from the perspective of Ritzicha. It's not murder, but it's still Chovel Ba'atzmo. And he says, listen, it sounds from the Rambam, which we mentioned before, that it's worse. From the Rambam, it sounds like it's actually a din of Nefesh. And that the only reason why it's permitted is because of Rodef. From the Rambam, it sounds like there's, in fact, a din of Ritzicha. But then he says, listen, when he asked me the Shaila, you didn't mention to me if the fetus was more or less than 40 days old. So you know, says the Roger Trevor, if it's less than 40 days old, then it's not as bad. Because the fetus is only Maya Ba'alma. It's only water. So therefore, it might not be the Isser, neither of Ritzicha, nor of Chovel. Because Chovel is only also if you make a wound. But maybe if you bore a fetus which is less than 40 days old, you're not taking blood. You're not wounding. You're just taking out water. So maybe there's no Isser of Chovel Ba'atzmo less than 40 days. Nonetheless, says the Roger Trevor, there's still another Isser which we have to take into account. What's this which we have to take into account? The Isser of Gzela. She's stealing from her husband. Even a fetus less than 40 days old is the property of the husband. So how can she steal from the husband his property less than 40 days old?
Even less than 3 days old, would that include?
What?
That would include
less than 3 days old if the husband's not agreeable, if it's not moichel, but the husband could be moichel in that case. He says still, even though there isn't a sergzela, if it's less than 40 days, it's not so terrible. Is Maya worth? Yeah, it's worth a pruta because it has future potential. Yeah, a lot of water. So in any event, it's precious water. So in any event, so he says. Nonetheless, if it's less than 40 days, it's not such a terrible Isser. So therefore, he says, you have to warn the woman and tell her that what she did was a terrible thing, and it might be involved, there might be involved here an Isser of Ritzicha, and of course there's an Aveir of Gezela involved, but nonetheless, you don't have to divorce her. And it says, I'll bring you a proof that you don't have to divorce her. Because it says, the Gemara in Gittin, that if a woman had to go to an Ir Miklat, a woman killed unintentionally, and she had to run away to near Miklat, to a city of refuge, like any other unintentional murderer. So the Gemara Gittin says her husband has to support her. He's still chayev b'mzonos. He still has to support her, just like any other husband has to support his wife. Says the Rogan Trevor, if you're going to say a murderer, a murderer is a cause for divorce, so why does he have to support her? Let him divorce her. So it's clear from this that the fact that one's wife is a murderer, at least an unintentional murderer, is not grounds for divorce. Okay? And so the Rogan, that's the way the Rogan Trevor passes, it's that there's not grounds for divorce. But what's important for us is that you see lined up one by one all the possible Isurim and their applications. And that's the bottom line. And the possible Isurim here, according to the Rambam and according to Tosfos, it could be Ritzicha. Not the classic Ritzicha for Chayav Misa, perhaps, but a form of Ritzicha. Even according to Tosfos in Nida, granted there's no Isur Ritzicha. But still, there's the issue of wounding oneself where it's unnecessary. Or in this case, not just unnecessary, but wasteful. You're wasting a person's life if it's abortion without special extenuating circumstances. And finally, even if neither of these apply, nonetheless, there might be an issue of gzela. If there's no mechila from the husband, then there's issue of gzela because the property belongs to him. On the other hand, we see that less than 40 days is not so severe. Why? Because it's Maya Ba'alma. And within the first 3 days, it's not even Maya Ba'alma, it's even less severe, because it all is, it is Ashchos HaZera. Halacha L'maisa, there's a big machlokas haposkim, whether these Yisurim constituted the Oraisa or constituted the Rabbanan. The majority of poskim, and I photocopied it, it's late, I'm not going to go through it all, but I photocopied from page 8, that from the Nishmas Avraham, that most of the poskim hold it's the Oraisa. A minority of poskim hold it's the Rabbanon, and the categories of what the Isser might be are all these categories which we discussed this evening. Just one last thing I want to leave you with, just a cute question, which is asked by a Rebbe Yisrael Meir. I'm not sure who that is, but this Rebbe Yisrael Meir asks a cute question. He wants to say, and I'll leave it, it's a cute question, which is no nafkamina lalocha, there's no ramifications of this lalocha lemaiza, but it's nonetheless, it's worth asking for the intellectual interest. He asked, if we accept that the Isser of killing an Ubar is not Ritzicha, there is no Isser of killing an Ubar, like Tosfos says in Nida, perhaps it's not even Isser the Rice at all, perhaps it's only Isser the Rabbanon, whether it be Chovel Ba'atzmo or some similar Isser, which is not a very stringent Isser. So he asks like this. We have a case in Yevamos. It says in Yevamos, if one, by accident, a brother, he had two brothers, one of which died without any children. His wife is Misya Bemet. She gets married to the brother. Let's say they neglected to wait the proper amount of time to determine whether she was pregnant or not. And she married the brother, and it turns out she was pregnant from the first husband, in which case the Yibum was not just null and void, but they committed a sin. They committed a sin for which you're chayav kores. The halacha is, if there's no requirement of Yibum, then for a woman to marry her brother-in-law, her husband's brother, is an avera for which one receives the punishment of kares. So even if you don't receive kares, you have to bring a korban. Asks this Rebbe Yisrael Meir, I don't understand. Why? I have a better way out. Instead of them having to bring korban and having transgress an avera, which is kares, kill the kid. Abort the fetus. Because if you abort the fetus, according to Tosfos Nida, aborting the fetus is only Issur d'Rabbanan. And being married to the brother of a husband is an Issur d'Oraisa. So kill the kid, abort the fetus in order to save the woman and the man from transgressing the stringent Issur d'Oraisa of living with the brother of a deceased husband where there's no mitzvah yibum. So there are many answers which are given. Obviously, one can think of many answers. But Reb Shlomo Zalman gives a simple answer. Shlomo Zalman Oribach, he said, even Tosfos and Nida, like we said before, holds that there's an Isser of Gzela. Now, here you're not stealing from the husband, the person who conceived the kids, because the husband is dead. But he's stealing from the Uber himself. The Uber himself also has the potential to become alive. Assume he's more than 40 days old. The Uber itself is a potential to have a life, and therefore he has halachos of ownership. The Gemara Yevamos discusses the parameters of ownership which a fetus has in the estate. So if the fetus owns the estate, surely the fetus owns himself. And you're not allowed to steal money in order to save somebody else from a transgression. So therefore, you can't steal the fetus's life from himself in order for the man and woman to save themselves from the transgression of a kares.
But executing the pregnant woman,
what? So that was the Kiddush Gemara of Mishnah Erechim, that since it's Gufa, so therefore there's no, that trans supersedes this or Gzela in that case. All right, next week, Mir Tashem, we'll begin discussing, now that we've clarified whether it's Nisa Daraisa, Isid Rabbanan, the different Shitos, and the Machlokas, we'll begin discussing specific cases.